Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I'm so pleased to introduce you to my colleague and new friend, Susanna Barkataki. Of course, we have all watched her in awe from afar for many, many years. But today, getting to know her in person, like as a real human, not the person that I see on Instagram, it was such a lovely experience, such a soft experience, just so much I could resonate with her energetically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And she has a wonderful new book that's come out in April of 2025 called Ignite Your Yoga. And this book really spoke to me because there's big parts of it about being a leader in the world of yoga. And I haven't seen very many books on yogic leadership. So I really invite you to check out this new book. You could even go to her website, SusannaBarkataki.com. And, there's so many beautiful offerings on the website, but just go check out the book, check out the website. And I think you'll find today's conversation deep and slow and easy. And I feel like I found a new friend and colleague in the yoga world. So I introduce you to Susanna. If you've not already met her, you're in for a treat, and we'll see you on the other side. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. This is Amy Wheeler, and I want to thank all the people who've come forward in 2025 to tell their stories. We are completely booked through the end of the year, so we will not be taking any more stories. In fact, many weeks I'm recording two every Thursday because so many people were willing to share of themselves, to be generous and gracious, to help other people to suffer less. It's been quite a year. We're so happy that we have another several months of stories to share on the Yoga Therapy Hour. But just to say that at this time, we're no longer needing people to volunteer. The response has been amazing. I feel overjoyed with so many of you willing to give of yourself to help others suffer less. We thank you. We're glad you're here. Let's go see our guest for today. Welcome, Susanna, to the Yoga Therapy Hour.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here with you.
I always like to tell our listeners where the guest is in the world so they can kind of picture you. I'll describe your office a little bit because it's so beautiful.
I am in the southern part of California. It is Fernandinho, Tatavium, and Chumash lands, and that's colonized as Santa Clarita. So, kind of in the mountains, a bit deserty, chaparral, and I'm in my home office, which you can describe. I'm very grateful to have this as a space to be.
So beautiful. I noticed it right away when I saw you online that there's a lot of white and you're kind of in a white and purple, kurta maybe. It looks like the top. And it looks very summery. But then in the background, you have this beautiful art. You have your new book, Ignite Your Yoga, in the background. But tell me a little bit about the art on the wall.
So the art is The Three Stages of the Absolute by the artist Bulaki, and I think he was 17th or 18th century. I'll have to look that up. I love it so much because it's like yogic art. And one form is kind of a gray from the earth coming up into a human form and then gold behind. And then you've got the center one where the human form is just floating, and then the final form, which is just the gold. And so is it like, is the absolute coming from formlessness into form or form into formlessness? And it's a beautiful triptych that what I have are just like not prints, but like recreations. It is not the original. The original is somewhere in India.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That's exactly what I saw when I saw it. I was like, wow, those are some stages happening. And I love that the last one is there's no human, it's just golden. We could get into a philosophical discussion about that, but we have other things we have to focus on today. Mainly, congratulations on your new book. You've had so many popular books, but this one is called Ignite Your Yoga, and it came out in April of 2025. How is it going?
Thank you, Amy. It's been so wonderful. And the first one is embrace yoga's roots. It was more like almost like a workbook. Like, here's what we're kind of getting wrong about yoga in the West, and here's what we can do about it. Here's our role. And this book, honestly, it's so much more stories. It's stories from my life. It's stories from other practitioners, contemporaries. I wanted it to feel like a sangha, like, oh, there's other people that care about yoga in our relationships, yoga in our communities, in our workplaces, and ways that we can bring it into the world. And so it's been really joyful to go around. I've been on tour for the last 2 months, and we'll be on tour a little bit longer. Short kind of travels to go and see and be with people in person and hear how yoga is coming alive in their world. And a lot of the feedback has been, oh, it's so helpful for me in my practice and as a teacher, bringing my yoga out into not just the classes that people teach, but, just how they're living their lives.
Yeah, I agree. This book has a really joyful feeling, a very expansive and inspirational. And I really appreciate that. I don't know if you've been following what's going on in yoga therapy, but we're having an identity crisis, which I think is a good thing. I think we need to step back and have an identity crisis and say, wait a minute, what are we doing here? And this idea of stewardship, instead of what is yoga or yoga therapy going to give to me? How am I going to make a living? Of course, we all have to pay bills, but I really want us to get back to this idea of stewardship and how are we holding these teachings with integrity and with ahimsa and with cultural significance surrounding them. And so, can you tell us just what does stewardship mean to you?
I think a lot about my relationship to yoga and my teacher who's in the Shankaracharya lineage. His name is Shankarji. That's what I call him. He always kind of jokes with me about, oh, you think you know so much, you're just scratching the surface, and if he's taught me something, I've had some kind of aha. And that is that reminder to always be a student. Right, to always be a learner, even if and when, and for folks listening, like you might be a yoga teacher, you might be a yoga therapist, you might run a school or a studio or all these things, or have many people come and learn from or with you. And I think of it like Indra's net, right? Like this web. And you can imagine, like I'm putting my hands, kind of weaving the fingers together. Everywhere the net crosses, there's this shining light of like knowledge and insight and aha. And so we each are a part of this net, and the texts are, and the classes we teach are, and then everything is. And so for me, stewardship is being attuned and aware of that whole net, of that whole kind of golden light of shining, little knowledge dawning slowly over the whole, that none of us is the entirety, nor should we really want to be. But how can we care for this, our students, ourselves, our practice, the text, the history of the teachings, all of those things together, so everyone kind of keeps getting to light up and keeps getting to learn. And it also is a big part of stewardship. The other thing that Shankarji told me when I completed a couple years of study with him was go home. Basically, he's like, go home and take, because I was in India where he lives in Bihar, and take yoga ethics, because the West, kind of thinks it understands yoga asana, but it really doesn't understand yoga ethics. And so your job is to bring that wherever you can, wherever it's needed, wherever it's applicable, which really is everywhere. And so stewardship is also about acknowledging the Vedic traditions, the Shramana traditions, the oral transmission as well, of these practices. Remembering that there's a history. These aren't just things that any of us made up. They're practices that we're caring for. And then thinking about how is the work that I'm doing, or the teaching that I'm doing, or the practice even that I'm doing, helping preserve like that richness of yoga for the future. Because the way that it happens in some of the studios, many near where I live, in the future, if that's all that transmits, you would think yoga was a workout, and for like weight loss and in a hot room and all of these things. And not that those are wrong or bad. I'm not trying to say those are wrong. It's just, how can you do that if that's your thing? And say, and there's more. You know, if you're curious, you can find out more about yoga as a lifestyle or yoga for, you know, yoga therapy for various issues and the things that happen to all of us in our bodies. And so there's so many angles to it. And the last piece I just want to say is connecting to yoga as collective care, right? So it is, of course, a very personal and transformative practice, but it also is a practice that can help shape family, community, society, and has for thousands of years as well. And so not forgetting that, even if we are mostly practicing for individual liberation, great, knowing that we're in relationship with others.
Can we just take a little side note here? I spent the weekend with a bunch of Tibetans that were celebrating the Dalai Lama's 90th birthday, and it was such a stark contrast to me because everything there was for the community, by the community, like people being of service. Their first priority was helping the community stay together culturally and spiritually. It was like very different than what I feel in the yoga communities, which feels more individualistic, not only for, you know, financial gain and fame, but also even for individualized spiritual liberation. Like I just had this like little crisis, like, should I be being a Buddhist? What do you think of that? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah. Oh, I love that you got to spend time celebrating the Dalai Lama's birthday. That's really joyful. I definitely think there's things we can learn from the monastic life or from, you know, people who are deeply committed to, say, a Buddhist practice. Like I think of it like a lay person who's a spiritual practitioner. Maybe they're not a monastic and they don't have robes. And from one another's cultures, right? And cultural practices. And Tibetan Buddhists are a very specific and unique and powerful lived kind of memory and current practice of preservation of a tradition, right? Because they're a community in exile. And I was lucky enough to study with the Dalai Lama a little bit in Dharamsala and some different Tibetan Buddhists. And there are so many different ways of expressing, right, what it is to be a Tibetan Buddhist or to follow the Dalai Lama, and also different versions of Buddhist practice, some of whom don't, you know, follow the Dalai Lama. And so not to say it's all one thing, but there is definitely a care for cultural coherence and cohesion and a deep attention to preserving Tibetan culture because it is being so actively wiped out by the Chinese government. And so I would say, yeah, if you're like, oh, I want to try this, yes, you know, and for folks listening, like in 2001, you know, many years ago now, was considering ordaining and becoming a nun in the Thich Nhat Hanh, which is a Zen Buddhist monk. And while there, met another young person who was considering becoming a monk. And many years later, now we're married, we have a kid, right? So I'll just say we didn't decide to ordain, but that desire, I think of it like a deep sankalpa, right? The spiritual desire and hunger to go deeper is always something that I think we can follow. And I will give one proviso, and I talked about this in the book. I think it's so important. When I was going deeper in that practice and with Thich Nhat Hanh, I actually brought my mom to hear him speak. And I said, Mom, check out this guy. You know, I'm really thinking about going deeper into this spiritual practice and tradition. Is this a cult? You know, you think, and she listened and she's like,
check.
Yeah. Cause you don't know.
Thich Nhat Hanh, you don't know.
Known, you know, really in the same way. And she's like, I think you'll be okay. You know, which was helpful. I was like, okay, just watch, you know, watch me, like make sure. And Dalai Lama, same, right? Like, I think we can kind of assume that we'll probably be fine, but I'm not saying blindly follow those inclinations, but if they're there, I do think we have these impulses that are meant to pull us further on our own spiritual path. And I definitely personally have gained so much from following those impulses.
Yeah. And I really believe we can do both. I remember back in college in the 80s, I was like in the Students for Free Tibet Club, you know, that's a long time ago. So it's always like been there, this deep longing to be part of Buddhism and, as you said, many different strands. But I think we can also be deeply ingrained in yoga philosophy and yoga culture. I think even India, maybe you would agree that it would be fine. Like when I spent time in India, there's a big bulletin board that has like Krishna, Buddha, and Christ all on the same picture, you know? So.
I think we forget too the Shramana forest renunciate traditions that both yoga and Buddhism emerged from are more similar than they are different. And, Buddha wouldn't have called himself a Buddhist. He's essentially a prototypical yogi that we have a lot of information about because of the rest of his life and his teachings. And so it isn't so separate. And, I've lived this, Amy, like I was born to a Hindu father and a Christian mother, right? And then grew up in the United States and have practiced with many different Buddhist teachers. And to me, sometimes when people ask, what's your religion? It's like a Hindu Buddhist practitioner. It's not, I don't see them as so separate. I see them as very, very interconnected and kind of like different specific philosophies and practices and paths that get us to that goal of enlightenment. And for me, enlightenment involves the community. It's not just individual enlightenment, it's collective, which is why I've always loved Thich Nhat Hanh as a teacher, because he's so much for engaged Buddhism.
And I sensed that when I read your book, how you're kind of going into how can we create social change together? How can we have stewardship? And this beautiful section on leadership, it kind of felt like there was a tapestry coming together of many different ideas. So it was lovely.
Thank you.
All right. So now I have to ask you what I consider a challenging question. You are out there in front. You are leading this parade for a lot of us, if you will. And I can tell just from being in your presence, today's the first time, but I can tell you're a sensitive person. You're a highly sensitive person. How do you manage making sure that you don't burn out in this deep desire to help humanity? There's also a real person that has a certain constitution. Tell us about that. How do you work and balance those things?
Yeah. Well, just to be really honest with everyone, I did recently burn out, right? Like I was on this book tour, West Coast leg, great. I love meeting people in person, wonderful. East Coast leg, great. Got to the last two stops. Then, and just again, being very transparent, also got my cycle, right? Came back. I'm in perimenopause. So
I'm
all the
sorry.
things, yeah, all the
I
things.
thought that word just sent chills down my spine from remembering.
Yeah. It's like understanding, for folks listening, right? Like time, place, causes, conditions, our own inner conditions, external conditions. And what would have been fine maybe a decade ago was absolutely not fine. And I was basically exhausted and really needed to tend to myself and recover. So I literally was on a tour talking to people about, how to sustain during these things. So I just want to say, I don't think there's a perfect formula. What I do and did do and was able to kind of bring in was a lot of awareness of what was happening and then care for myself so I could restore, meaning like just taking care of basics like sleep and what I was eating, gentle movement, letting the people in my life know what was happening, and then trying to move because I'm not done with the tour, right? Like I have another few legs of the tour. And so bringing awareness of, all right, I can travel on one day, but I probably shouldn't travel and then teach on the same day, right? So for all of us in our own lives, it's like, what are the things we have to do? Some of us for work, right? Or for family or caregiving responsibilities. Are there ways we can set it up where there's spaciousness? So I think realizing that kind of rajasic, like overexertion and overactivation, that sometimes is coming from internalized capitalism or hyper individualism, right? Noticing that in myself. And then, from a yoga therapy perspective, right? Connecting to what is happening in my nervous system. How can I care for myself? How can I ground, prana and make sure that I am still whole, even as I'm doing all this work. Interestingly, the one other piece that I'll say is because of my nature, which is very fiery and idea driven, so like fire and air, I rested. And then on day like five or something, I started planning a whole curriculum. I'm like, oh, I'm back. Like, I'm okay now because I can tell that that creative energy. So it's also understanding the signs within ourselves of what indicates kind of, I don't know, like stasis, health, well-being. And for me, it's ideation, ideation and applying a little bit of fire. And so from my sofa. Oh, because the other piece I didn't mention, right, was all the internal personal things. But that same weekend, ICE came into LA, right, the Immigration Customs Enforcement Agency. That was really the thing where I was like, oh my gosh, I want to do so much. And I literally cannot move from my sofa. You know, I cannot get up or my bed. Like I can go to those two places. And so I rested, did a lot of work, like to connect people as much as I could from that place. And then just a lot of sleeping, a lot of resting, reading, and then moved into a time where I started thinking of curriculum for those how we address these moments. And didn't make it though, just let my brain kind of ruminate and then made some protest signs and to share with people that people can use and then just kept resting. So the other piece is more rest than we need or think we need, paying attention to what those signs are. And then of course the Gita wisdom of doing every action that I must and can do, but then releasing attachment to the fruits, which is a big one these days, you know, in the span of our lives. Sometimes the thing that really gets me down is if I feel like we're moving away from progress and like humanism essentially and care for the community. But when I pull way, way back, this is really a blip in the big scheme of things. And so part of my role is to like restore my own faith, my own belief, so I can keep doing the work and help other people restore their belief. And when I really lose faith or inspiration or motivation, I do come back to yoga ethics and that bolsters me. So I'll pull out texts, you know, and read from the Gita or read yoga sutras, or there's such timeless wisdom. And it sounds like cliche, but part of what that is for me is it's going to be applicable in any time, place, or circumstance. So I really do rely on them.
We're going to take just a little break here to talk about something that matters to us at the Optimal State. And that is our Monday night community that has been together for many, many years now. And we'd like to invite you in. On Monday nights, we have a topic of the month. And in October, that happens to be integrating mindfulness into your daily life to manage pain. Now, whether you have pain or you're a yoga teacher, an Ayurvedic practitioner, or a yoga therapist, there's so much to learn about pain care as it relates to emotional intelligence and self-awareness, and basically how to manage ourselves physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So each week we have a yoga sutra that we talk about that relates to the topic. We do some postures, very gentle. We do some breath work, some meditation, and then we come back together at the end for a discussion. So we would love to see you in October of 2025 and join us for our Monday night classes. You can find the link to sign up in the show notes. Thank you for listening. And now we go back to the podcast episode and our guest telling their story.
Yeah, I appreciate your transparency. I'm a very fiery person and highly sensitive also. And that ability to finally see ourselves and how the elements are functioning in us and when it's getting close to that edge and knowing, okay, I've got to pull back. Like that is an art and a science.
Mm-hmm.
And to not actually fall over the edge, you know, of burnout. So I appreciate that transparency and just recognizing that as we get older, like you said, we can't really fly for 2 hours, jump off the plane, go to a studio, teach for 2 or 3 hours, then be expected to go to bed and actually get rest because we're all wound up. Like, it's just too much.
It's too much. Yeah. And it's a different, you know, for me or for us, a different stage of life. But for folks listening, you might be like, oh, I'd be totally fine. I would love to do that. And it's great, you know, like go enjoy. And if and when there's ever a time where it isn't, that's okay too, right? Like it's knowing kind of time and space and the time of our lives, the energy present. And then for some people listening, they may be like, oh, I never would want to do that. I need
They
much more
know.
time and space, you know, that earth-based kind of grounded leader, right? So that for me has been so helpful to also surround myself with and collaborate with people who have a different energy. Like I'm kind of fiery, watery, airy, mostly fiery, airy, actually. And so my friends or colleagues who are more grounded, more like earth-based or water-based leaders, we do really well collaborating together. So that's another thing that we can bring in is like, we certainly don't have to hold this all on our own. We can work with one another. And then how great is that to be able to learn and listen to your colleague, you know, while you're having a moment to rest and restore. So that has helped as well.
I love all that you've said, especially about finding the right partners to kind of help balance us off and pass back and forth. And I also think there was a part that I want to acknowledge about each of us has a certain prakriti or constitution, and therefore we will be better suited to be the leader of the parade versus the person who's helping nourish everybody in the parade versus, you know, there's so many ways to be of service and really figuring out at your stage of life, with your constitution, with all the other responsibilities you have, where can you be of service that is going to not throw you into burnout on a regular basis? It's not sustainable. And there's a part of me that feels a little bit selfish. Like, who am I to even think it's okay to not burn out? Like, this is a very serious time, and we all have to give 110% every day, all day. But I love what you said about, you know, if we draw back, we know there are human beings really suffering right here, right now. And this is a long game. This is a marathon.
Yeah, there's a part in the book for those listening, maybe you can do this, but when I'm on the tour, I love to get folks into a restorative shape. So, whatever that might be, like cuddled, curled up, maybe just hand on your heart. And I like reading this part, which is short. It's in chapter 11, Moving into Conscious Leadership. There are many ways, myriad ways to serve and make a difference in the world. Don't get tripped up on having your activism, your way of being a change maker, look like someone else's path. All is welcome when you choose to act in accordance with yogic principles, when you discover your dharma. And if you think you're not doing enough or will never be that kind of leader, and then I'll just paraphrase the message, there's a kind of yoga leadership that only you can do and that our world so deeply needs. So just knowing your way is enough, and we don't need to compare with others. Really, like, letting that sink in and letting what you're doing be enough.
You know, if we all did that and found the thing or the things that we're capable of and good at and don't completely burn us out, like, can you imagine the huge shifts that would take place in within humanity? I mean, it's pretty remarkable.
It really is. And for me, yoga has really helped me understand that. Yoga and Ayurveda, you know, particularly together, helped me understand that about myself. I came to all this work from being a high school teacher, teaching English and history, and realizing, okay, I'm really teaching power and empowerment. And so, how can we do that even more fully? And that's what led me to leave the class, you know, kind of K-12 classroom and move into yoga education. This is the clearest pathway to that self-knowledge and also understanding others that I've found in the world. So I'm very grateful for it.
And also that you are so beautifully suited to bring it together with your English mother and your Indian father. And, you know, like, I know every one of us is special in some way, but this is a particular point for Susanna that, okay, I think I'm better able to serve here in the yoga community. There's tons of people that teach wonderful high school history, but I think I'm really suited for just this.
Yeah, on your website, I love the words you use, like bridging, right? Bridging the East and the West. I don't think you actually use that, but ancient knowledge or wisdom and modern tradition or modern well-being. Sorry, I'm probably not
No,
paraphrasing you
it's great.
well, but there's the feeling, right? This bridge. I'm like, oh, yes, I've always felt like a bridge, a bridge between worlds. Actually, I'll amend that to say I felt like a broken bridge when I was younger. I didn't know what to do with these multiple worlds. And now I feel like a more whole and helpful and beautiful bridge within, as well as able to help others bridge and connect. And I also think that's some of the maturing of my work from the beginning. The first book and some of my earlier work was kind of, I don't know, like strident, or like, I think some folks probably felt bad reading what I was sharing. And now I'm like, oh, yeah, I get where that was coming from. And actually, how can we do this together? How can we do this where no one is made wrong, even though these are very serious things and we want to address things like oppression and, power and imbalance and harm, but in a way that heals everyone, not makes anyone wrong or doesn't leave anyone out.
In full honesty, I remember some of your early Instagram things. I kind of felt like she doesn't even want support with her mission. Like, I kind of felt like, ugh, not that. I don't know. It's probably some fragility, white fragility, but I felt like, gosh, I want to be of service. I want to do this. Am I still okay to connect, And now I don't feel that anymore. Now I feel like, no, we're going to do this together. We are, basically all pushing in the same direction. But it was really helpful to ask myself, am I serious about this? Even if Susanna doesn't want anything to do with us white people. Like, I didn't think that, but let's say that my fantasy in my mind was true. Am I still committed to stewardship of yoga, regardless? And the answer is yes. Right? So I think that was such a helpful thing to not get caught up in the vulnerability and insecurity of that, but rather just, make it more concrete that, well, I'm doing this regardless.
That's beautiful. And I just want to say, because I think that feeling is so common. And for folks listening, if you've ever had that feeling of like, ah, can I do this? Am I doing it right? Like, I truly believe that no one can tell you whether you should teach yoga or not, share yoga or not, or whether you're really doing it correctly or not. I think that's something we have to come to on our own. And that even asking that question to me is a beautiful indication that you care, right? Back to full circle to yoga stewardship. And so, again, it's like, some of the educators, less so me now, but definitely my past education, and there are still some educators who are very strident, very strong, right? And kind of push us to think like, oh, do I belong in this? I love how you're like, okay, let me take this as a point of reflection and see what is my truth. And that's what I hope all of us do, is get to see our own truth, like the satya, the true nature of our own intentions and our own connection. And now I'm always hoping to do it in a more warm and inclusive and loving and welcoming way. And that's just like that shift of growth and learning and also seeing what's worked. People don't like being told they're doing things wrong. It's not an effective or long-lasting way of creating change. It's what's effective and helpful is like working together, all of us coming from our different positionalities and our different viewpoints. It's also much more fun.
I've often thought that, yes, there is so much fragility. There is so much, privilege and all of it. It can all be true. And unfortunately, it's in the room. So what are we going to do now so we can actually get where we want to go? That
Come
kind of
together.
brings about this idea of yogic leadership. And you say that it comes from kind of living from your sadhana. Can you say a little bit about that? Because that's a very different approach than what you're going to see on LinkedIn about the conventional leadership approach. It's like, no, don't go out there, go in here.
When you think about all of the yoga leaders in history, and there's so many we can think of, like Akka Mahadevi or Mirabai or Janabai, and those folks particularly are like devotional it's yoga or divine or God or whatever name you want to use before everything, right? Like their leadership, and later, more modern, you've got Gandhi and other nonviolent freedom fighters in India. I think of like Arundhati Roy, who is working for the rights and the freedoms of the voiceless, like folks who are impacted by big dams and water projects, right? So there's so many people who, when we think about their leadership, their, I don't know if you would call it like heroism, but I would. I feel like it is heroic, like the actions that they take, the Dalai Lama, you know, even though his practice is Buddhist, not officially yogic. It's because of their deep commitment to their personal practice first. They are letting the practice drive, like support and come. I don't even think it's coming back to, it's just being in it so much that if you fall away from it, then you come back to it. So inner transformation first and then outer action. And you're right, like conventional leadership, I think it really rewards and centers control, charisma, external credentials, you know, and where yogic leadership is like viveka, inner clarity, that inner seeing, like a clarity of purpose or connection to our dharma, and then ethical leadership, right? And it's also not as hierarchical, it's more like shared, embodied, and interdependent, and then also looking at power with, like, how can we create power, not top down, but in relation. I think about A.T. Aryaratne, who's an incredible leader and practitioner in Sri Lanka, again, inspired by a lot of Buddhist teachings, but yogic ethics and principles as well. And he always said, you know, as you build the road builds you. And he's literally building roads, like in villages for villages to get water, you know, and then like the road builds you. It's our actions. I think in Christianity, they say like faith is in works, right? Like through the actions, through the sevas, through our service. And so it's not that we have to like sit on the mat and be like, I must perfect my practice before I go and serve. Sometimes it's let my practice feed my service and let my service feed my practice, right? Not from perfection, but from just continual kind of refinement. And so what that's come to look like and what I kind of notice is like a clear ethical foundation, knowing when to speak and when to amplify others, or like working on that, you know, collaborating, trying to lead from that inner steadiness, stira, right? And then like joy and grace, sukha, like you can kind of feel when people are leading from, and in ourselves too, stira and sukha, and not from urgency or fear, even though you're absolutely right, it's like urgent times. And then finally, it's not being afraid to look at the shadows, right? Our own and others, meaning like our attachments and our aversions. To me, sadhana really reveals those and allows me to look at them and then, you know, with love and with care, examine them. I think that's some of what we can look at from a yogic perspective of leadership.
There was so much juiciness there. We could go into into a whole podcast just about that one answer, and maybe we will at another time. I think I just want to sit with that. There is so much to come from that. And if you're listening right now, you might even want to rewind that part and stop it and then do a meditation, a reflection on what Susanna said, and then 10 minutes later, start it again, take a few sentences in, reflect again. I mean, I think the part that stands out to me is that as you build it, it will build you. That is 100% been my organic experience. And I have failed at many, many, many things here in the yoga world, but every single one of them built me. Like, I can't say I regret it. Was it painful? Yes, but I can't say that every single thing that's happened, including closing down the Optimal State Yoga Therapy School, that's been a painful thing I've had to do, but that school built me. All the challenges that came up, all the hurdles we had to get over, all the struggles, like it has built me for what I need to do next. There's no regrets. You know, you just leave everything out there on the field when you do this work.
Wow. Where are you going next?
Well, strangely, not to make this about me, but when I made that decision last February, I had about a 6 or 7 month grieving period, not knowing what I would do next. I mean, I really didn't know. It was like driftless in space. And then, strangely, a position at Maryland University of Integrative Health came up, the chair of yoga and Ayurveda, and I applied for it in October and then was hired in December. So for the last 6 months, I've been in that position, running their yoga therapy program and Ayurveda program. So I shouldn't say running, I should say supporting and stewarding it. But that was really powerful to me also to give it up to the divine and just say, I can't do this by myself anymore. Like, run a whole yoga therapy school by myself. I'm burning out. It's not okay. And then just wait in the stillness, the dark, not having any idea what could come next. I mean, that was very powerful for me.
That's really incredible. And so I'm sure folks listening can relate of like, I don't know where I'm going, but I know where I am is not right anymore. And just being able to be with that, I think our practice, asana too, really helps us hold that tension. I'm putting my arms out like in warrior one or two, holding the tension and then hold physically. And then holding it in our lives and what it takes to be able to, breathe through and push and wait and, be and act and not act. Oh,
Yeah.
I feel you.
Do you have times like that, though? It feels to me like that fire and air in your constitution kind of brings things in more quickly. The flame comes back. Have you had big gaps where you're like, what the heck am I doing?
Yeah, I absolutely have. So a decade ago, before I started doing, because what I do is run yoga teacher trainings, 200 hour, 300 hour. I'm actually considering, and I'd love to talk to you more about, I did run one yoga therapy training program. Not, this was before IAYT existed, I think, or in the early days. I wasn't connected to it, but more of a community health, I would call it, yoga therapy program for survivors and, folks teaching and sharing with people in recovery. And so I've been considering that, like moving into doing more of, yoga therapy as community care and healing justice. So I think in some way I'm sort of in it, like the what do I do? And then last year I did think like, and I had a time of maybe 4 or 5 months of like, I'm not gonna do yoga teacher trainings anymore. I'm gonna pause that. It's so much work. I love it. I love teaching. I love being with people for an extended period of time, 4 or 5, 6 months a year, and helping them, supporting them, I would say more than helping, but supporting them in transformation with yogic tools and kind of harmony tools. I'm like, what am I really supposed to be doing this? Am I supposed to be doing something else? Consulting, writing. And I let myself sit in the not knowing. And then it did kind of come back around to, in part, just to be really honest, I didn't have a new thing or another thing pop up. So I was thinking about consulting or working in organizations. I'm like, oh, I don't think that's right. I think I'm an educator, not corporate. Like, I just don't think I quite fit, like my shape, it doesn't quite fit
Yes.
in the
I know. Or
corporate world.
entrepreneurial. I mean, you're great at being an entrepreneur, but is that sustainable for us postmenopausal
Right,
women?
exactly. Yeah. So, and then I came back to, well, I love teaching. If I could do this and not have to ever worry about like a paycheck, I would
Right.
still teach. Like, I love it. So I did sit in that and kind of came back to being in the same place. So for someone from the outside, it might look like, oh, things are just continuing. But inside, I was really in that liminal space of like, am I just kind of giving it all up or stopping it all? And we'll see. I do
Yeah.
think this,
Who knows what will unfold? I actually had so much grief over it. I thought nothing was going to unfold. I really thought I was going to go to the post office and get a job and do some yoga stuff on the side. Like, I honestly had resigned myself to that. It makes me almost cry. But my God, the divine is incredible. Whatever is going on inside of you, even if you're still having this thought, I just want to remind all of us to trust, have that Shraddha. Letting go doesn't mean giving up. It just means you're letting go of control of how you think it needs to play out. I wish someone had said that to me, so.
That's
Who knows
beautiful.
what the future holds for you, Susanna?
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you for being with us today. It was really nice to get to see you in person and speak with you and feel you and hear your voice. I'm really grateful. And, there's so much to talk about. Maybe we can do this again sometime.
I would love that. Thank you, Amy, and thanks for everyone for listening and for your practice, right? It's no small thing.
Thank you so much. As we complete the show today, I just want to thank Susanna for being here, for being present, for getting up really early in the morning to talk to me with such grace. And I'm just left feeling kind of soft and easy. My breath is deep. I love to end an interview where it feels like there's been a connection made and understanding. And I hope all of you listening, we're feeling that way too, that you could kind of exhale, let down just a little bit, and, just kind of take in all that was said. If you haven't yet, please consider going to Susanna Barkataki's website. It's susannabarkataki.com. And, checking out her homepage, her blog, her speaking engagements, her upcoming trainings, her books. There's so much goodness on the website to go just see what she's up to. All right, everyone, have a wonderful, wonderful week, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you to our guest this week, and thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Something that I've been working on behind the scenes with my friend Marlisa Sullivan is going to come out in 2026. We've been writing a book together for the last year where we go deeply into yoga philosophy and yoga therapy. And then we have the scientific vagus nerve, heart rate variability, all sorts of polyvagal theory to back up why it is that yoga philosophy is right on track and why it's been helping people for thousands of years. We're turning in our book this fall to the publisher, and in the spring of 2026, it should come out. So we're just giving you a little heads up that that will be coming out soon. And when it does, we can't wait to share it with you.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.